Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt.
Happy 2025.
Yeah, right?
Look at us.
It feels like a sci-fi
Look
year.
Look at us. We're it here. Does. We're in it. You know what happened a decade ago, Zach?
A decade ago.
You know, some of the things in sports we were talking about a decade ago, or about to talk about, because some of them haven't happened yet. Legion of Boom, Cam Newton, Steph Curry becoming Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ezekiel Elliott in college football.
He was really good at Ohio State. He was really good.
I saw a post this morning and it had like all of these different pictures from like the year of 2015. And I was like, man,
2015 does not feel like a decade ago.
No.
The Cam Newton MVP year was awesome. Steph Curry, I mean, obviously he's in his mid 30s now. It feels like he's been around forever. You forget.
That was the like emergence of Steph Curry.
You forget his early career was just hampered by injuries, namely, I think his ankles and stuff like that. So like, he eventually got, you know, healthy and then becomes the Steph Curry we all now know. And I think
he's one of those athletes that's like universally like, yeah, he's a good dude.
He's a good dude. Fine. A lot of fun to watch.
Yeah.
The Golden State Warriors were good until Durant kind of showed up.
Yeah.
They were
fun. That run they had where it was like, oh, all these guys were like kind of like homegrown. They're all like out of nowhere, like figured it out on their own.
They were the antithesis of the super team.
Yeah, but they all came from like
they were drafted there.
Grew together. Yeah. Right. It wasn't like they all went out and built that team. It was before that era of let's just go out and buy free agents.
And then they became that team.
And then they became that. You live long enough to either die a hero or become a villain. So.
Yeah. I mean, that quote is always so true. We did have college football yesterday. Do want to mention, though, of course, before we get rolling here as well, the horrific terror attack in New Orleans. It did cause the Sugar Bowl between Notre Dame and Georgia to get moved to today at 4 p.m. Eastern. That'll be on ESPN. That's the last of the quarterfinal games as Penn State and Boise State played on Tuesday. Yesterday saw Texas and Arizona State and then Ohio State and Oregon. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. Of course, me being a Texas fan and it so far being the best playoff game we've had in quite a while. Not for me personally. I imagine every neutral fan, it was great. For me, it was awful. But we'll talk about that. Sabres play tonight as well. They're on the road. It's a bit of a road trip they've got going on now. They're in Colorado. That game is at 9 tonight. Pre-game will get going at 8. We'll talk to Paul Hamilton.
Sabres after dark?
Oh, sure.
Kind of.
We'll talk to Paul Hamilton at 10:30. Bills also also have some news today on that. We'll get to that here in just a second, but we'll talk Bills with Sal Capaccio at 11:30. And on that, the Pro Bowl rosters were announced, which always feels incredibly random whenever those are announced. That you know it's end of the year. You never know when, and it just kind of, here you go. All right, have fun.
It's the day after New Year's Day. Yeah. Like, what are we doing? Like, pick a better day than just January 2nd.
It was like 9 in the morning, right? 9 in the morning.
Yeah. Have fun. Like, I mean, I'm sure, like, the way the holiday fell this year, I'm sure there's still people that are just, like, waking up right now because they took today and tomorrow off. Like,
yeah, you wake up with good news.
I guess so. Well, some people got good news. There are four teams that have no good news on the Pro Bowl. Four teams in the NFL with no Pro Bowlers. Zach,
I think you get all of them.
Can you guess them?
New York Jets.
Yep.
Tennessee Titans.
Yep.
New Orleans Saints.
Yep.
I almost was going to say Raiders. But ooh, there's no way. Yeah, no, Bowers.
Brock, yeah. Bowers.
New England Patriots.
Incorrect.
Who? Man, they have a Pro Bowler.
Apparently. Yeah. I don't know who it was. I haven't found it yet, but.
All right. NFC or AFC?
AFC.
AFC.
Okay. I was about to say Giants, but then I thought Neighbors. I was going to say Giants.
I think Neighbors got it.
Jacksonville?
Nope.
Who is it?
Come on. Think about it.
Cleveland? No, Myles Garrett.
Lackluster season.
I've got Tennessee already.
Fell
Jets,
off of
Saints.
Expectations of winning their division. Come on.
No. Indianapolis?
Nope.
No, Jonathan Taylor.
Closer to home.
Oh, boy.
Not geographically, by the way.
Oh, okay. I have no idea. I'm blanking.
Miami.
Miami. Oh, wow.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep. No Pro Bowlers in Miami.
Nope. That makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah, so their offense never got off the ground. I mean, the whole thing with Tyreek Hill this year was he's killing our fantasy teams.
No, the four teams with no Pro Bowlers this year, the Jets, the Saints, the Dolphins, and the Titans.
I'm happy I got three out of the four.
Yeah, good for you.
In pretty quick succession. I felt good about that.
I really need to know now, who on the Giants?
Had to be Neighbors, right? No.
No.
Even Neighbors. Yeah, who on the Giants?
Ah, Dexter Lawrence.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the better defensive tackles.
Who
in all
else
football.
Did you say that was, like, surprising? That did have one?
Well, the Raiders with Bowers.
Jacksonville's punter.
Is he their one? Is he really their one? That's tough.
No, that's Bill Stroud, the other one from Jacksonville.
Oh, okay.
Their long snapper.
Man, that hurts. That's tough.
Those are the only two, I think. I'm trying to skim through here. I don't see anybody else.
Well,
Jonathan Taylor made it from Indianapolis, so there's a Colts guy.
The Bills, though, are kind of closer to those teams than many of the others. They only have two on the immediate roster,
kind of
being Josh Allen and Deion Dawkins.
Kind of surprising. They do have some alternate, I think, an alternate in DeMar Hamlin.
First team alternate is Connor McGovern and James Cook. Third alternate is DeMar Hamlin. Fourth alternate, Terrell Bernard. Fifth alternate, Reggie Gilliam and Ed Oliver. Reggie Gilliam, Ed Oliver, Spencer Brown, and Dalton Kincaid.
Okay, so there's a lot of alternates in there.
There are a lot of alternates. This is the least surprising thing to me ever. The Bills, most they got, I believe, was in 22 with eight, which is a lot. That's a ton. But they typically, even in their good years, are around like four or five, where the opposite. And I tweet this out. I did not mean this disrespectfully, but it is what it is. The Ravens typically lead the way with like 9 or 10, like all the time.
Yeah.
And to be fair, like since they've drafted Lamar Jackson, they've had as high as like 13. I think in 2019 they had 13. They had 8 last year, I think, 9 this year. Their first wide receiver in Zay Flowers in team history and be made.
That's
made
really
Pro Bowl.
Cool.
They've had guys like Jacoby Jones and someone else who went as a return man,
but never
Zay
as a wide
Flowers,
receiver.
The first guy as a wide receiver.
Real quick, a thought on, you know, the Dolphins not having one. Travis Kelce gets selected as the second tight end behind Brock Bowers. I think rightfully so, because Brock Bowers has been incredible.
Mark Andrews should be on
with
that.
Literally nothing. Mark Andrews should be there. You know who else should be there? Jonnu Smith.
Jonnu Smith.
As someone who picked him up in fantasy football like early on in the season.
Give me Jonnu Smith.
He deserves it. This man went out there with almost nothing, had the best career of his, or best season of his career at 821 yards, 7 touchdowns, on 79 receptions.
Yeah.
As a tight end on a bad team. I'm just saying, I think he should have been on there. I don't think Travis Kelce should have been on there.
There was a run in November where Jonnu Smith had like 15 targets every game, it felt like.
Travis Kelce has 823 yards. Okay, five less yards than Jonnu Smith on 97 catches, so almost 20 more catches. And how many touchdowns Travis Kelce has? 3.
Oh, wow.
3 touchdowns compared to 7. So, again, I'm not saying that he was snubbed, and I'm not saying I want a Dolphins player to get accolades or something, but he helped me get to a fantasy championship. So,
real quick, I
got to give him his flowers.
I do want to bring up, because this gives me a good excuse to bring up Brock Bowers, because the Raiders are a non-factor, and they have been all year.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the best rookie seasons. I mean, he has one more game, sure.
Yeah.
That's one of the best rookie seasons of all time, especially at the tight end position. Him having 108 catches already in a career. I mean, you can argue now, right away, because his quarterbacks are Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew and not Spencer Rattler, Desmond Ridder, that he's already the best receiving tight end in the league. He's kind of what everyone wanted Kyle Pitts to be when he came out and was, you know, a top five draft pick. And everyone was thinking, like, that's the guy. That's the guy that's going to change everything. It turned out to be Bowers. And he looks awesome. I think the Raiders should be a team that is potentially looking to trade for J.J. McCarthy because of how bad the quarterback class is. I think you bring him in, he already is kind of an adult in the locker room sort of deal. I think McCarthy really is a coach's dream.
Mm-hmm.
I joke about it a lot, but I really do think that. And then he's got the athletic ability to kind of back it up. He sat behind Kevin O'Connell and Sam Darnold all year just learning, just soaking up all that knowledge. And with already having, I think, an elite weapon there, I think they could be really, really good for a team like the Raiders if they want to go make a trade for McCarthy, because I do think the Vikings will pay Darnold. And then if that happens, take a swing. I don't necessarily know where they're at in the draft order. I'm not really in love with either Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders in terms of building your franchise around them, especially a franchise like the Raiders that is not in any way like the best landing spot for a guy.
No, because you have Brock Bowers, and that's it.
And that's it. And I think someone like with J.J. McCarthy's temperament, I think could do okay in that area. If the Raiders were to turn around, great. I would have said the Bills in 2018 was not a great spot for a quarterback to mature and grow into what he is, and I was proven wrong.
Right.
You know,
right.
But the Jets routinely prove people right.
But if you look at the culture around the Bills when Allen first gets here, like you look at the past of the people that were here before Allen, and like what he was going to be working with or who he was going to be working with, it looked like a better potential than it does with, you know, the Raiders, the Jets, places like that. Because when you look at who Allen had when he first came in here, it was Sean McDermott, it was Brian Daboll, I think. Yeah, Brian Daboll was here right away. And you look at what they came from, and it's like, yeah, you know, you don't know anything about these guys. You don't know where they could go. They could flop. They could be, you know, not what you want for a rookie quarterback, or they could be great because you can see the pedigree they've came from and who they've coached with and where they've coached, that it looks like a better...
Daboll was here in 2018. It was Rick Dennison was the 2017 guy.
Mm,
okay. So he was here immediately with Josh.
Right. Well, and that's my point. Is like you're starting out with complete unknowns, but you can look at kind of where they've came from and say, you know, there's potential there, but you don't know anything yet. With the Raiders and the Jets, you look at what they have and it's like, sure, I guess there's potential, but it doesn't look great if you look at the past and you look at, you know, what they've come from. It's not like they have a good foundation or anything. I mean, Antonio Pierce is fine, I guess. The Jets are a complete mess. I mean, what are they going to do? They're already talking about moving off of Rodgers and Devontae Adams in the offseason.
Well, I mean, they should.
Well, they should, but I'm just like, that just shows you how much of a mess that team is.
Have you looked at the draft order, by the way?
No, I have not yet. I know,
if you're the Raiders or the Jets and you do want to move on to another quarterback, like, you have to trade for somebody like McCarthy, or you have to hope that Darnold hits free agency.
But again, it's still the problem of what situation are you putting him in? Like, if I'm Sam Darnold looking at free agent options and the Jets, the Giants, and the Raiders come calling, I'm going to the Giants.
Potentially if Dable's still there.
Even if Dable's not there, you have Malik Nabers. And I'm sure they would stick offensive-minded if they're, you know, moving on from Daboll, which I don't think they are at this point. I think they would have done it by now, personally. But you look at all the potential teams that could go for a guy like Sam Darnold, and, like, I just – the Jets and the Raiders are in the worst draft, the one of two potentially good quarterbacks. They're not even, like, generational talents.
Vegas was there, and then they've won the last two.
Right. But they're not bad enough, or they're not good enough, I should say, to attract better talent. And they're not in a good position where if they go get a guy like Sam Darnold and he is okay, which, by the way, he would never go back to the Jets. If he went back to the Jets, that would be insane.
I want it so bad.
It would be wild. Like, for him to decide that, not for the Jets to go after him. The Jets should absolutely pursue a quarterback like that. But for Sam Darnold to go, yeah, I want to go back to the place that destroyed my career and made me feel like I was the worst football player in the world.
Man, I want that so bad. I want that so bad. Because what's he say, like, in his introductory press conference? Like, I'm back, baby.
I'm back. Walks off stage.
And that's it. Oh, man, it'd be good. It'd be fun. It would be a lot of fun. We'll talk more on the draft, obviously, when that season comes around.
I want to bring up something with the Pro Bowl real quick here. Mm-hmm. So I was looking at some numbers on Pro Bowlers in the league in looking where how it correlates with the top teams. Mm-hmm. Of the top six teams in the NFL, you got the Chiefs in order here. You got Chiefs, Lions, Vikings, Bills, Eagles, Ravens. Pro Bowl numbers from 1 to 6 go 5, 7, 6, 2, 6, 9. The outlier being the Bills with 2. That, I think, does more for Josh Allen's MVP case than anything he has done all season.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think the case is already done. You saw the betting numbers at the end of last week, where it was like, okay, he's minus money still.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to play the final week of the season.
I mean, his team is fourth in the NFL, and it's him and one of his linemen that are the two Pro Bowlers, and then the other guy, Lamar Jackson. Who, again, I don't want to discount his season because he's had a great year. He's been a great player. He has eight other people with him in the Pro Bowl, and sure, some of them are defensive, but there's a fair bit that are offensive as well. Mm-hmm. So. I think that does a lot for his MVP campaign, if there is still anything like that going on. Like you said, it's still minus money. So like,
yeah, I think it's all but done. But the fact that they have nine Pro Bowlers, I think they have nine Pro Bowlers and five losses. They're going to be the three seed and had to fight to the end to win their division. It's not even anything I can really say. That's Baltimore every year since Lamar Jackson has gotten there. They win a lot of games. They have a lot of Pro Bowlers. They have two playoff wins. What else am I supposed to do with that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's who they are. I mean, I'm fine with it. Again, they have two playoff wins, so it's not like it takes like a ton away. The Bills have won a playoff game every year since 2020.
Five of the nine Pro Bowlers are offensive, counting Lamar Jackson.
Mm-hmm. I will say, though, the biggest snub and somebody that I think is going to be really funny because he's going to carry on the tradition of Bill's secondary members not making a Pro Bowl, making an All-Pro, is going to be Christian Benford.
That was pretty crazy.
He absolutely should be on the AFC Pro Bowl list, 100%.
Who's on there right now? We've got J.C. Horn.
That's the NFC.
I'm sorry.
The AFC, we've got Marlon Humphrey, Derek Stingley Jr., Patrick Sertan, and Denzel Ward. I mean, honestly, I think you could probably take off Humphrey.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
And throw in Benford.
Yeah.
I thought he was actually going to, like, the voting was done, but in my mind, it was like when he had that interception over Rodgers,
mm-hmm.
it felt like there, I was like, and there it is. Like, he has, like, kind of a big moment. It's not really a huge moment, but it's one of them where it's like, and there it is. It's another pick for him. He's good. And we move on.
Marlon Humphrey this year, though, six interceptions.
He does have six. Never mind then. All right.
And a touchdown.
Does he really?
Mm-hmm. And two forced fumbles. Pretty good year. That's pretty good if you're Marlon Humphrey. I mean, like, that's...
Stingley. Is it Ward, then, that's kind of the outlier there?
Let me see.
Denzel Ward. I mean, if we're just going off interception numbers, right. He has two. Mm. That's not a great way to go off of it because once you can become a good corner, I mean, we saw this with Tre'Davious White. He made an All-Pro, and then teams stopped targeting the guy.
Yeah, because you look at his other numbers. He's had 19 passes deflected or defended or whatever PD stands for. Passes defended by a defensive player.
Yep.
So, I mean, he's getting the ball thrown at him. He just might not be getting a chance to intercept it, I guess, if you want to put it that way. But he's making the plays.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I'm not saying Christian Benford's not, but the four guys in there, like, I feel like they're all on the same level, but maybe just some of them have better stats or something like that. But I feel like if you're going off eye test, I think Benford probably gets in there over some of these guys.
Oh, because I think Benford's going to be an All-Pro. It may not be first team, but I think he'll be an All-Pro.
But, like, I mean, Pat Sertan, by far.
He's great. I thought, had a really good shot at Defensive Player of the Year.
Really?
For Denver, he makes that defense go for them. I think it's a bad matchup for a team like the Bills where they don't typically have like that number one receiver you go to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's a bad matchup because he kind of sits on the one and kind of let the chips fall as they may. That's why I think it's a bad matchup for them. But he has been incredible all year long. And you look back when there was like that feeling that he was maybe going to get traded. And like every Denver reporter was like, guys, he's not leaving. Like Sertan is the guy on this defense, and he proved it. thoroughly this year, and their team that just needs to avoid being the 2004 Buffalo Bills and beat some of the backups of the Kansas City Chiefs. With that being said, though, that is a game I'm excited to watch because Carson Wentz, he's not that great. But Josh, and I say this a lot whenever Wentz is brought up, his career makes no sense to me, even with some of the context. Like, I need to know everything that was going on in those Eagles locker rooms and film rooms and everything like that, because, I mean, we talked about it, the MVP stuff. He was going to win the 2017 MVP. He tore his ACL with three games remaining.
Yep.
And Brady was close enough to him to surpass him. Then, 2 years later, he's a 4,000-yard passer without a single receiver being over 500 yards. That's incredible. Allen, you know, we're talking about an MVP, and he runs a little bit more than Wentz did, especially at that point. Allen isn't even going to hit 4,000 yards, and he does have some guys that are up there in, like, the 700, 800-yard range.
Mm-hmm.
And Carson Wentz is sitting there going, like, I have Zach Ertz and a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I have.
You can never, ever talk bad about Carson Wentz in front of me, because I will defend that man forever. He has been bruised and battered for his entire career and still almost, like, I'm not saying he's the reason the Eagles won the Super Bowl in 2017 because he wasn't playing, but he is certainly the reason they got there.
Well, he got them the one seed.
He pushed them so Nick Foles could finish the job. And Nick Foles did great. I'm not discounting what he did either, but it's just,
I think the way that team's playing, though, they were the best team in football. I think he would have gotten them at least to the Super Bowl. Maybe he doesn't beat Tom Brady, but that team was on a different level.
Yeah.
It was, like, that's the thing, too. The play he tears his ACL, he scores against the Rams.
Yeah.
That ultimately wins him the game and gets him the one seed. But again, I mean, you look at the 2020 season, though. His numbers plummet. He plays just 12 games. They go 3-8-1, 16 touchdowns to 15 picks. His completion percentage the year prior was 63.9. He goes down to 57.4. I mean, his passer rating goes down from 93.1. And then the 2 years prior to that, it was above 100 to 72.8. His QB rating goes down from, he was in the 60s, as high as 78.6 in 2017 when they were, that's the year he was going to potentially win the MVP. They were elite on third down, plummets all the way to 41.9. I mean, I don't know what happened that year, like 100% off of memory.
Wait, which year was it?
2020. And it all collapses. Even sack numbers. He took 28 in 17, 31, and then 37, and then up to 50.
Which,
it's just unbelievable.
Which year was the year, because I remember Jadeveon Clowney hurt him in a playoff game.
That's 2019. That's the year prior.
Yeah. I'm looking at, here it is. Yeah.
That's in that playoff game.
He only played like the first quarter because he has one completion on four attempts for 3 yards.
He was gone after like their second drive.
And once again, it's another time of he was fine. He was great. That was the year of 4,000 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that mixed with the knee injury, it's just, it was too much for him for the next season. Because
I also wonder how much them drafting Jalen Hurts in the second round really did it to him.
I don't really know if
there was something mentally wrong.
I don't know. I don't think it's a mental thing there. I think it was he's been hurt so many times in so many different ways that injuries in sports are a tough thing. You can't trust your body eventually.
Because after the torn ACL, mentally, he wasn't able to run nearly as much. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, look at his rushing yards from the time he tears his ACL to after the fact. Like, he was consistently rushing for a decent amount in the first two seasons and then just kind of stops and then starts again in 2019 and 2020. But you just went through the numbers. He was sacked 50 times.
Yeah, it was more. His ability to scramble was gone.
Well, right. He was just having to get out of the pocket. He had to always get out of the pocket with those teams. But, you know, it's just frustrating, like, seeing a career like that. That's one of my favorite what if careers. Like, if he didn't even tear his ACL, or if he just didn't get hurt when he came back, like if he didn't get hurt in the playoffs, I wonder, you know, would he still be on the Eagles, or would it have gone differently with how he left the Eagles?
Yeah,
so,
potentially. He was a guy after that 2017 year. Like, when I looked at Josh Allen, I'm like, if he's just Carson Wentz, I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
I was happy. For most of my life, it was like, cool, if he's just average, if he's Andy Dalton, I'm thrilled, because then I'm going to have a guy that's here for 10 years and I can feel somewhat comfortable in, and there will be years where he pops off. If he's Carson Wentz, I'm through the roof, and he surpassed him in every way, and kind of to a certain extent, hit the ceiling that Carson Wentz himself was just never able to hit. They're both 6'5". They're both like 230, 240.
Both come from small schools.
Yep. And then where Wentz picked up a ton of injuries that kind of derailed his career, Allen didn't. And Allen fixed his mechanics, got better across the board. Where even look at that 2017 year, that team was just absurd on third downs, and that was a huge reason to their success. 803-0550, the number to call. Want to get your thoughts on the Bills Pro Bowl. I guess snubs. They only get two guys in, Josh Allen and Deion Dawkins, players like James Cook, who leads the league in rushing touchdowns. Christian Benford, one of the best cornerbacks in football. Spencer Brown as well, one of the better tackles, right tackles specifically, in the NFL. Don't get named to the Pro Bowl, though. Two of those three are on the alternates. Christian Benford, a full out-and-out snub on that end. But coming up next, we'll talk a little on the Sabres. It's been a little while since we've talked to Paul Hamilton, so we'll do that after a quick timeout. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here in the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR.
Here's Byram holding with a shot. Rebound behind him. They score. Sabres tie the game seconds after giving up the first goal of the game. Zucker in the blue paint got to this one. It's 1-1 in Dallas.
Dan Dunleavy there on the call. Sabres ultimately would lose that game 4-2, although Jason Zucker has been on a bit of a tear as of recent. Three goals in the last four games. Sabres, though, again, did lose to Dallas. They're back in action tonight, continuing their road trip here. They take on Colorado tonight at 9 p.m. Colorado, though, on a five-game win streak. Start out the year not in the greatest of spots. They've really turned it around. And for more on the Sabres tonight, we go to the Western Hotline as Paul Hamilton joins the show. Paul, Happy New Year. How was yesterday for you?
Thank you. Happy New Year to you. Yeah, the Avalanche have won 9 of 11, if you want to go even further. So, I wonder how much the Sabres think about what happened here in Buffalo.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, Colorado's a weird team. Like, everyone kind of assumed they'd get going. So, to me, it's not even surprising now. Like you said, they won 9 of 11. It's not even surprising. They're a really, really good team. But, I mean, going into this road trip, it's nice to see the Sabres not – I don't want to say and be mean and be like, well, they're watchable now. But, I mean, they've been much better. They look like the team during their own little win streak there where they're scoring a lot. The special teams look much better. They've not turned a corner yet. They're still well below 500. But, again, they're watchable.
Yeah, it was a shame for them in that game in Dallas where it was either a tie game or a one-goal game. Buffalo coming in, it had power play goals in 3 out of 4 games and were 4 for 10 at a 40% clip. So the power play, at least for a little bit, was doing very well. They never got a power play opportunity, which maybe, who knows? Well, you know, could that have changed the game? We don't know because we didn't get to see it. But usually all year long, most people would say, well, don't get a power play opportunity because it takes all your momentum away. But, in this case, they never had one. There was only one power play in the whole game, and the Sabres, by the way, killed it off. Their penalty kill, and that's probably why they won three games in a row and were competitive in the other two, is because the special teams have woken up again. And they were, remember when they won 7 out of 9?
Yeah, exactly.
They were number one on the power play in the penalty kill in those 9 games and number 4 on the power play. You know, you win when the special teams do well. You normally don't when they don't. And then the special teams floundered. They floundered. Now the special teams are back to doing fairly well again.
You wonder and or hope, I mean, on my end it's more hope, that maybe the lessons Ruff and the coaching staff are trying desperately to instill in these guys are finally starting to stick. I don't know. I mean, Paul, you've even mentioned it too. During the losing streak, they'll end it, and they'll probably go on a winning streak again. Like, this is just what this team does, and for me, at least, that's been, like, why it's a little difficult to, like, really buy into, you know, Quinn starting to score or stuff like that, because it's just like, I almost expected this.
Yeah, well, this group's been together for 2 full years and however many games they've played this year, and they've shown us nothing in all that time that would tell us that they're going to go on anything more than a 3-game winning streak, which they've done 4 times this year. And all 4 times they haven't been able to, you know, get that 4th win. I mean, the first time it was against the Florida Panthers, they lost 5-2. Second time it was against the Montreal Canadiens, they lost 7-5. Third time it was against the Minnesota Wild, a game they outplayed the Wild, but, you know, Wild's goaltender stood on his head and they lost 1-0. And now the 4th time they've done it, they lose 4-2 to the Dallas Stars.
Paul, looking at, like, you know, the whole winning streak, losing streak thing that we're constantly fixated on here because it's been a problem over these past few years, but looking at the upcoming games for the Sabres here, they did, you know, somewhat put up a fight against Dallas, and they're one of the better teams in the NHL. Now they have Colorado and Vegas coming up here. It seems like, you know, what we've seen from the Sabres in recent years is they get up for the good competition. And do you think that can continue here tonight against teams like Colorado? Like, not to say Colorado's been the best all year, but they have the same core that they've had for the few years now. And I wonder if there's got to be a turning point here somewhere. And I feel like even though it's a loss to Dallas, it still could be viewed as like, hey, they still played decent anyway, right?
Yeah, the years all combined to me. It was either last year or the year before. I believe it was the year before, but I'm not positive. They played a really good game here in Colorado and won. They were a couple of years ago, they were a very good road team. They couldn't buy a win at home, and that's what cost them the playoffs because of their home record. Well, many things cost them the playoffs, but they were close. But, you know, they have played well in this building before. You know, you look, they just lost to the Dallas Stars, but they beat the Dallas Stars earlier in the year. They should have beaten the Colorado Avalanche earlier in the year. That's the game that basically blew up their season that really they've never recovered from. And they haven't played Vegas yet. They did all right in the game in Washington. That was a 4-2 loss, but they were competitive in that game. And so, you know, those are games that, they've already played all but Vegas and done pretty well in. And look at what the Montreal Canadiens did in Vegas. They got behind, I believe it was 2-0, and they won the game the other night. And now Montreal, starting with the Buffalo win, have won 6 out of 7 games.
Paul, what have you seen from Rasmus Dahlin since his return? I mean, he gets the second star of the week for the NHL last week, 3-0, 7 points, 7 assists. Didn't do anything in terms of the score sheet on against Dallas, but, I mean, you've been talking about it, where he really hadn't looked good all year, you know, going back and forth between, you know, is it health, what's going on? And then, you know, after him kind of saying, this is the last game I'm missing, he performed really darn well.
No, he has. You know, now that he has the back spasms at least under control, he said it's the best he's felt all year. It's the best he's played all year by far. I mean, absolutely by far. So, excuse me. So, yes. So, I think he's played very well defensively. He's killed plays. He's, you know, helped out with other when things go bad defensively. He stopped a goal in Dallas that was headed over the goal line, and he dove back into the crease and pulled it out before the whole puck got over the goal line. I think it partially had, but the whole puck hadn't. So he saved them a goal there. And, of course, you talked about offensively, where he had tied a team record for defensemen getting 4 assists in one game. And then in the next game, he had 2 assists in the first period, giving him 6 assists in 4 periods. So, you know, he was, you know, contributing the way Rasmus Dahlin can contribute at both ends of the ice.
Paul, last thing for me here. College football yesterday, New Year's Day, big day for bowl games. Your Iowa State Cyclones were like, it seems like the first national victim to Camp Scataboo. My Texas Longhorns also were. Did you watch any of the football yesterday?
Yeah, after I flew here to Denver, I got a chance to see most of the or all the fourth quarter of that game.
And, oh, I'm sorry.
You know, the Iowa State game, they deserved to lose. I mean, Arizona State was the better team by far. I think I told you after that game, but with Scataboo, it was like 10-year-olds jumping on his back, and he was carrying them 40 yards downfield.
That's exactly how it feels.
Like 3 of them. Mm-hmm. It's just a man amongst boys, and it really showed me what a good team Arizona State was. And I gave them a chance to win that game even before it started. You know, they're better than people think they are, and they really should have won the game. I mean, they got behind. It was funny. I had checked into the hotel that I think they were behind. Texas had just scored 24-7. Mm-hmm. By the time I got to dinner, it was tied. It was so I didn't see the comeback, but then I saw all the overtimes and everything. And their defense left them at the end. I mean, Texas had a 4th and long to lose the game. If they don't get the first down or the touchdown, game's over. And they got the touchdown. And then they got the touchdown on their next play to take the lead. And then they got the two-point conversion. And then you knew that was it for Arizona State. And sure, it sure was it. But, yeah, they were a better team. They deserved to be where they were. And they showed it with the game they played yesterday.
Yeah, I think that was unquestionably the best game so far of this revamped 12-team playoff. And now with the Big 12, Texas and Oklahoma being out, there is sort of this void of who's going to be the big dog on campus for the Big 12. Colorado, of course, has a shout. Iowa State's always been a good team. They were in the Big 12 championship this year. Arizona State, though, Kenny Dillingham, it's his second year. He's in his mid-30s. He's a young guy with a lot of energy. They could be like that sleeping giant in this new-look Big 12. Should be a lot of fun.
I love how like Nebraska left. You know, Nebraska and Oklahoma were the class of the Big 12, even back when it was the Big 8.
Yeah.
I mean, they were like number one and two in the country back then. I mean, they were the class of college football. Nebraska leaves, and they're nothing. I mean, they're just nothing. And now Oklahoma, I just love that Oklahoma left and was finished one game under 500 and lost to Navy in their bowl game.
It's the best.
That was awesome. And enjoy your new league, boys.
Texas is doing all right. Oklahoma, not so much. Nebraska, not so much. All right, Paul. I would say, you know, get ready for a long night, but you're in Denver, so it shouldn't be too bad tonight. But enjoy the game. We'll talk again soon.
All right, take care.
That was Paul Hamilton there on the Wester Hotline. For us here in Buffalo, the game does get going at 9 o'clock in Colorado, with pregame getting going at 8. Brian Koziol and Paul Hamilton will have you covered right here on WGR for that. Yeah, yesterday's game, Josh, stressful. Stressful.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't have been. It was 17-5. You were fine. Finish it.
I thought the game was over as soon as the punt return.
Silas Bolden, yeah,
I thought 14-0. I thought the game was over.
Yeah, go back to my Twitter. I said they're going to put up 50. I felt
I remember
really
I
stupid.
Saw that. I saw that.
I remember I texted you, and I didn't get a response for a little while.
Nobody did.
Nobody did. But like, it was just like, man, he's got to be going through it. It was a great game, though. Honestly, like, again, neutral fan perspective.
Oh, it was awesome.
Incredible game. Especially because of every single other game that's happened so far is just
it hasn't been great.
Blowout.
They've been blowouts. But even the Rose Bowl later that night is a blowout.
Well, and I will say about that too. Like, a lot of people are seeing that and saying, see, look, even the good teams, like, we just got to go back, get rid of the 12 team. It's already bad. It's like, no, some teams just have bad days. Like, Oregon was undefeated. They had to have lose at some point. And it was going to be a stupid loss. They beat Ohio State earlier in the year. That's a game where you look at it and you go, no, this was just an any given Wednesday in this case for a team to just come out and lose. Other games you can look at and say, yeah, no, they're like Texas was building up to be a blowout. I'm trying to think of some of the other games that were.
Indiana played very scared. I would say coached very scared against Notre Dame.
Penn State played very well, but Boise State just.
If Genty didn't have some of those turnovers, though, I think that game was much closer. Yeah, it's more. When they played SMU, that was. Why is SMU here?
right. So again, it's I get what people are saying, but at the same time, it's just like, especially when you look at that game specifically, the Rose Bowl. Yeah, sure, Ohio State blew out Oregon, but Oregon is not a bad team. They just had a bad day.
It's also it's college football,
right?
And that's where it has frustrated me a little bit with people. I personally, I think the perfect playoff is six teams because ultimately, I don't think there are actually 12 great teams to compete for a national title. It's not like basketball where you can have upwards of all of, one, two, and the three seeds all could genuinely can be competing for a national title and good enough to win a national title. Typically in college football, if you have three great teams, you're in a really good spot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think six would have been perfect. I think 12 can maybe be a bit too much. But it allowed teams like Arizona State, who are building a program, and again, they're in their second year with Kenny Dillingham, their quarterback, who I think Sam Leavitt is an NFL guy in 2 years. I think he has all the tools you'll want. His best receiver by a wide margin, Jordan Tyson, was not in. I think it was something I heard on the broadcast, like 48% of their wide receiver production comes from him or something ridiculous like that. He didn't even have his best guy. He was still, playing his heart out, and he was doing great. Scadaboo is vomiting profusely, still playing. Like, they're building a program. Scadaboo's going to go to the NFL, but I really like what they're building there, and I do think they can be a main member in the Big 12. And on that, too, I think it was really good for a Big 12 team specifically with all of the stereotype around the Big 12 of, like, they don't play defense, for them to really take it to Texas's offense for most of that game, really outside of, like, the first two drives, was really, really good by them. I mean, they fell off at the end. Texas kind of, you know, it's the old meme where the guy's playing with his back, you know, against the chair, and then it's like, oh, all right, I got to lean forward. I got to lock in. That's kind of what they did. But Texas plays with their food, and Arizona State was willing to take it to them. And it was a fun game if you're a neutral. For me, as a Texas fan, I wanted to die during most of the second half. The entire third quarter, most of the fourth quarter. 803-0550, the number two call. Allie, we'll get to you after a quick timeout. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And this is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Hope you had a wonderful new year. We go now to the phones and we get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Allie joins the show. Allie, how are we doing this morning?
I'm doing great. How are you, fellas?
Doing very
well. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well.
Yeah, I had two things. I have a useless piece of sports trivia for you that's one of my favorites. So I'm from Wyoming originally, which is how I became a Bills fan. And so Carson Wentz, you guys were talking about him and Josh. I don't know if you know this, but he and Josh actually have had the same college head coach. Craig Bohl coached at North Dakota and recruited Carson, and then was obviously the only, you know, D1 coach that offered Josh anything, and, you know, the rest is history. So anyways, when people talk about the two of them, that's one of my like favorite little random pieces of trivia that not everybody knows. So he just retired, coach retired last year, and we miss him very much in Pokes country, but, hell of a coach. So, and then I will say this, the Denver playoff situation, everyone in Denver is pretty sure they're going to come in to Buffalo and boat race us. And I'm not someone who talks a lot of stuff, like at work or whatever, because I like to just let Josh and the boys do the talking on my behalf. And I just think it's really funny because they're really sure that defense is just going to come boat race us. And I just don't know if they have a single clue what's coming to them.
That is so, a little wild. Yeah. Thanks for the call. That's wild. Because I'm usually.
The confidence, the swagger. I love it. Good for you, but. No,
and
it's not going to happen.
Maybe this is because of the scar tissue I developed, you know, growing up in the drought. I've never been that confident that I think I'm going to boat race this team. Like even when we've talked about, like, who would you rather have in the playoffs, Miami, Cincinnati, or Denver? I say Denver only purely out of the fact of it's a rookie quarterback. But I think every game in the playoffs is going to be a stress fest, and like that just is what it is. It's the playoffs. I get it. Like, if you have a blowout, good for you. Like, those don't happen often in the NFL playoffs. Denver, have you watched your team play for like the last month? Bo Nix hasn't even been playing that well. And outside of a 70-yard throw to Marvin Mims against Cincinnati, you couldn't muster much offense against a bad defense in Cincinnati. Buffalo's defense, it is what it is. It is not that great this year. I do think preparing for the 2025 draft, they will probably go defense early and often. And that's fine. Like, I agree, they should. Walter Nolan on Ole Miss could be a guy that we talk about a lot here, defensive tackle or some edge rushers as well. But, man... Yeah, I don't understand the confidence level there either. I think 1-7 seed has won in the playoffs too since they've moved to 7 seeds, and it was Green Bay against Dallas last year. That's the one. That's the only one. And I don't know. Cool. I mean, good for the confidence. Also, on Craig Bohl, by the way, Wyoming misses them. First year without him, they go 3-9, and they did not look good at all. They look very off. In terms of the Carson Wentz and Josh Allen thing, it's always been something I've thought about of – did Bohl look at those guys and be like, oh, they're the same guy?
Right, yeah.
Because he didn't work much with Carson Wentz when he was the starter. Carson Wentz's years starting were really 2014 and 2015, where ultimately North Dakota State still continued on their success. And then Josh Allen's most of the successful years at Wyoming. But he recruited him. And I do wonder if he looked at those two and went, yep, those are the exact same guys, and I'm all in. Because, I mean, Carson Wentz, his college stats have him at 6'5", 235. Allen's 6'4", 230. You know, both can run. Both have a bazooka of an arm. Again, that's who I wanted Allen to be initially when they drafted him. If that happened, I would have been absolutely thrilled. And I'm not rooting for him this week. I want Denver to win. That's who I want the Bills to play in the playoffs. I'd love for him to have a good game and for Denver to ultimately win, but I'm really hoping Denver does not pull an 0-4 Bills. Let's take a quick timeout here. Coming up at 11:30, Sal Capaccio will join the show. There was an injury report yesterday for the Bills, albeit effectively a walkthrough in terms of the designations. We'll get more on that when Sal joins the show at 11:30. But if you want to join the show, 803-0550, the number to call. This is WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Mann hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Sabres game tonight. They're playing at 9 o'clock out in Denver to take on the Colorado Avalanche. Pre-game right here on WGR. We'll get going at 8 o'clock with Brian Koziel and Paul Hamilton, who we did speak to earlier in hour number one. The Bills are back to work today. We'll get a word in on them when Sal Capaccio joins us in just about a half hour. And coming up later today, this afternoon, college football, as yesterday's Sugar Bowl was postponed due to the terror attacks in the early mornings yesterday. I believe the death count has risen to 15. For more on that story, of course, our sister station WBEN has the latest there. The game has been postponed to today at 4 o'clock. But we go back to the phones as we're going to connect to our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. And we go to Alan. Alan, how are we doing this morning?
Good. How are you doing? To disagree friendly, I don't agree with you about Carson Wentz. And if you remember in 21 when Frank Reich was his coach, he was having a great year, and all of a sudden something went backwards on him. I think he lost his last three games, and the one game he had to get in was the Jacksonville game, and that
awful.
Was the year that it was his worst game of his professional career in Jacksonville. Well, Jacksonville kind of plays well against Indy anyway, and they have historically for years. And I just think this weekend, I think Denver's going to pace that team. I think they're going to roll them by two or three touchdowns. I don't know what it is in me. Denver plays that team tough. They hate it. They hate that team. My daughter lives in Colorado Springs, and she talks about, you know, her boyfriend's father out there is a huge Broncos fan and how they just hate the Chiefs. And if you remember the block field goal last year, they beat them in Denver and should have beat them in Kansas City again. And I think they're going to attack Wentz because he's a statue back there.
Well,
and
that's, that's the thing. Their tackles, though, are so bad and Wentz can't move. I think you're spot on there.
And I just, one other thing, too, I'm very shocked at James Cook not making the Pro Bowl. I thought, you know, I'm not a Pro Bowl guy. It's a touch football game, as ping pong or whatever the heck they do. And they play video games and stuff. So it's kind of like a joke nowadays. But James Cook leading the league in touchdowns, not getting in. I think he'll be an alternate eventually because half these guys don't want to go anyway. Allen won't go, so they'll find some guy like Huntley again or – well, you know, who's the quarterback for the Dolphins? Huntley?
Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but Huntley currently playing, yeah.
Yeah, and one thing on that, too, Tua probably is done for the year, so if Miami came here, we'd see Huntley. And I read online this morning, Adam Schefter had it out there, that he's got his back is really bad. He's not playing this Sunday again. And he's probably done for the season, even if they make the playoffs. So, I mean, you take that. I know Tua is their quarterback, but even if he was in, I think the Bills would smoke him. But anyway, that's my opinion on Wentz. I'm not a fan of his. I know he had one good year and led him to the Super. He was a backup. Then he went, you know, and he's got good leadership skills, but he just can't get it done. I don't know what it is. But anyway, take care.
Yeah, Alan, thanks for the call. I actually don't know if he has good leadership skills. I think it's a big issue with him. I think that's why the Eagles moved off of him, is he was not great in their locker room at all.
Right, and I think, I mean, it feels like ever since that all happened, it felt like there was something else going on in that locker room too, just because of the way everything went down with Doug Peterson leaving shortly after and everything like that. Like, it felt like the vibes were just off there. But hey, they got the Super Bowl, so nobody really asked questions, and you just kind of move on. But I just... It's tough because, like I said before, like, I'll defend Carson Wentz forever, but it's right now you can't really defend him because he's not what he used to be. He's an older player. He's injured. He's not that he's on a bad team by any means, because the Chiefs are amazing, but
no, but
he's going to be playing with their backups. He's not going to be able to
build a career as a backup. He did. Right. He got his big deal.
He should have been a long-term starter. Like, he was starting caliber. We just didn't get to see his career to the full effect. I mean, again, if he doesn't tear his ACL, or even if he doesn't hurt his back, I really think that he's maybe not still in the Eagles because there, like, again, there was weird things that going on there. Mm-hmm. But I think he's still a starter in the league. He might not be the best starter in the league, but I mean, look at a guy like Jared Goff. Jared Goff, not that he went through injuries, but he went through a lot of scrutiny with everything that happened with the Rams.
Oh, yeah.
And then he gets traded one for one for another quarterback. And then that quarterback goes on and wins the Super Bowl right away. And Jared Goff is still a starter in the league, and he's still helping his team get to potentially their first Super Bowl in literally forever.
I was going to say, I think, like, inarguably, it's been a win-win for both teams.
Well,
about the Pro Bowl. We'll talk James Cook there in a second because I do think it's a really good shout. Led the league in rushing touchdowns of 15, and he's a second-team alternate. It is what it is. I feel more bad for these guys because it's still in their contracts, making the Pro Bowls and stuff with, like, their fifth-year option as well, some of these rookies making it. But, like, Goff, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFC, makes the Pro Bowl this year along with Darnold and Jaden Daniels. And you look at the years he's had in Detroit. This is his fourth season in Detroit. First year, they were really bad, 3-10-1. There's a famous video when they won their first game. His wife was crying, and it was a big moment for them as well, especially leaving a team that, you know, outside of his rookie year, he had a lot of team success there. Then the next year, they're 9-8, missed the playoffs, but his stats were back up there. He's 4,400 yards passing, 29 touchdowns, 7 picks. And then these last 2 years, they make it to the NFC title game last year, and he throws 30 touchdowns. This year, another 4,000-yard season, 36 touchdowns, 10 picks. And if they win on Sunday night, they are the number one seed.
Mm-hmm.
First time in Lions history, they'll be the one seed. And he'll probably have around like 38 to almost 40 touchdown passes if he has himself a great game.
Yeah.
And they'll probably be lining up to win at least another playoff game, which is something for Lions fans. Winning multiple playoff games? Hell yeah.
Unheard of.
Like, let's go.
But again, going back to the whole, you know, Carson Wentz thing here, I'm not trying to say, you know, oh, it's just because of the injuries, because there was other things. Like I said, there was problems going on in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell.
That's why they drafted a guy in the second round in 2020.
Right. But leading up to that point, it was, again, if he doesn't hurt his ACL, if he doesn't tear his ACL, if he doesn't hurt his back, one of those things doesn't happen, he's in a completely different situation. Mm-hmm. He's maybe a starter in, like, I don't know, because he leaves Philadelphia in 2020, let's say.
He goes to Indy.
Let's say that still does happen. He goes to Indy in 21, and he's healthier, right? He doesn't have the back injury, or he doesn't have the knee injury mm-hmm. with the history there. There's a good chance he might still be in Indy as the starter. I mean, granted, they might still draft Anthony Richardson, but still, like, that's not going very well.
Yeah, his career really did fall apart due to injuries, and I think him personally as well. Yeah.
Right.
But,
well, it's a lot of mental stuff, too.
Like, I do think, though, on Sunday, because their tackles are bad and he can't move. Mm-hmm. You're seeing a lot of Mahomes having to move around a lot. He's still taking a beating.
Right.
And so Wentz, who already can't move, his scrambling ability has died as his career's gone on. I think that's going to be a tough day for him. And that's where it's like, Denver, just do the job, get it done,
right.
and you're in. You know, Dolphins I don't think it's official, but they're probably going to start Tyler Huntley against the Jets. And then the Bengals will play the Steelers. We'll see if the Bengals can even be the Steelers. I mean, we'll see on that. I think the Steelers have a lot to play for, whether it's playing Baltimore or Houston. And for a team that has not won a playoff game since 2016, there's a clearly more favorable avenue. But I will say this, if I'm Baltimore, I don't want to see Pittsburgh at all. I don't want to see Pittsburgh at all. Because that team, look, you had a great game against them earlier in January or earlier in December. But that team, for the most part, has had Lamar Jackson's number. It's had the Ravens' number. You've had a tough time with them. I'd rather not see them in the wild card round, knowing I've got to play Pittsburgh. And I said this when it was potentially Pittsburgh's the 3 and Baltimore's the 6. The idea then of Baltimore, yeah, sure, you get to host Pittsburgh. Then you got to go to Buffalo. The likely chance of, even if you get through Buffalo, you got to go to Kansas City. That is a tough road to go.
It's a long road.
Yeah, for any team at all. That's where, like, for Buffalo, you get Denver. It'll maybe be a tough game, but you should probably be able to, like, close that out based on your talent. Then Baltimore at home, probably a little bit better. You feel better going into that game. Then Kansas City, it's a hard road regardless if, you know, things fall as they may. But for Baltimore, that's – grueling getting the divisional matchup that you don't particularly play well against, then Buffalo, then Kansas City. Let's go back to the phones here. We've got Cliff on the line. Cliff, how are we doing today?
Hey, I got a couple comments. I'll make it quick. So I think the Pro Bowl actually helps Josh Allen. So my reasoning is there's only two of us. So how did we get to the second seed? There's only two Pro Bowlers, and Baltimore, who has nine, has the three seed. We must have the MVP, and they must have, you know, a better group of top-end talent, which I think our team is better. But, you know, that's just my, you know, my two cents on that. If Lamar is so good, he has more Pro Bowlers. Josh Allen only has two Pro Bowlers, himself and Deion Dawkins. That would look more highly on Josh's record and whatnot. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Cliff, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
And I agree with you on that point. I mean, for me, it's just excluding the quarterbacks. The Ravens have eight Pro Bowlers. The Bills have one.
Yep.
And excluding the quarterbacks.
And even if you want to exclude the defensive players, there's only four offensive players, or there are four offensive players for the Ravens.
Yeah,
and one of them's the running back.
I think the MVP discussion is done. I think Allen is going to get it.
It should be.
I also think for a lot of people, and I genuinely mean this, I think for a lot of voters, the fact that Derrick Henry is going to finish second in the league in rushing, only behind the ninth player to rush for 2,000 yards, does not bode well for an MVP candidacy, especially because I think, funny enough, we've actually sort of fallen back into genuinely giving it to the most valuable player rather than just like the highest stats, looking at Lamar last year. And then this year with Allen, you know, Jackson's been incredible. There's no denying that. We are watching some of the best quarterback play ever between Allen and Burrow and Mahomes and Jackson. And then you look over in the NFC and you see some of these young guys like Jane Daniels, who was taking what was perceived as, and was rightfully so, a bad organization in Washington right back to the playoffs. Goff, we just mentioned how well he's playing. You know, I think we're seeing some of the best quarterback play maybe, I don't want to throw out ever, but definitely in recent memory. And so I think that's going to play against his case. It is surprising, though, that guys like James Cook are not on there, because I don't want to like discount his season just because he's not a Pro Bowler. 15 touchdowns. If they let him go out there against New England, he should get 1,000 yards as well, which would be two straight 1,000-yard seasons for him. He did make it last year as well. He is also a first or second alternate. So if one guy doesn't go, which could be Henry or Joe Mixon or Jonathan Taylor, he'll get in. It's more surprising Mixon made it and not James Cook.
I was just about to say that.
That's more surprising.
We were talking before about guys like Christian Benford not getting on there. And again, this is all stats, and you got some of the things you have to base it off the eye test. James Cook and Joe Mixon, stat-wise. Joe Mixon has 11 touchdowns, James Cook 15. Joe Mixon, 993 yards. James Cook, 981 rushing yards, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
James Cook, 258 receiving yards. Joe Mixon, 304. The one thing that I think gets it, because they are running backs, Mixon has... Ooh, actually, I read this wrong earlier. No, this gives a better case to James Cook. Mixon has 240 rushing attempts, and James Cook has only 197.
So really should be James Cook.
Yes.
The Mixon poll is very weird. It's very, very weird.
And I'm thinking back here, like looking back at the season and accolades and stuff that players get throughout the season. Joe Mixon had that one game in week three where he was like pretty good and won AFC Offensive Player of the Week because they couldn't give it to Allen 2 weeks in a row.
See, I'm like thinking about it too, and I'm like, I can't remember a game where Joe Mixon went off this year.
He had the one game against, I think it was their week three game.
I'm looking now.
Week four against Jacksonville, 101 yards, one touchdown, and like that was it. But he won Offensive Player of the Week, and he also had a good week, I guess, against Indianapolis this past week, but they barely win 29-27.
This would have been week one against Indianapolis. He was very good.
Okay, never mind.
30
I'm reading this.
159 yards and a touchdown. That was the
reading
week,
this backwards.
Very good.
Okay. Yeah, sorry. The schedule flipped on my screen. But still, right, that was very good. And then he had another week in week three and week four and week five. So he had a few strung together in the beginning of the year where they were good, but it was never like notable, right? Mm-hmm. Like he was never the guy. And I'm not saying James Cook has had had games where he's the guy, but there's been a lot of moments where you look at that offense and it's like, yeah, because James Cook was really good that game.
I'll say, I watched him kill Miami in week two, like, alone.
Yeah, it was basically just him.
He didn't even touch the ball that much. He had 18 touches.
Right.
And 3 touchdowns.
Yeah. And so it's just, I just look at, like, Joe Mixon's stats, and yes, he has had consistency, I guess.
Oh my God, not even. He had 12 touches, 3 touchdowns. Oh.
Really?
Yeah.
In that game against Miami.
11 rushing attempts, 78 yards, 2 touchdowns. He had 1 catch for 17 yards and a touchdown.
Man. Okay, yeah. God. No, I just, I look at the two side by side. And again, it's a stats thing, so you don't want to just base it just off what you see on the paper. But, I mean, again.
I mean, come on.
When you give the ball to James Cook, you know something explosive is going to happen. Joe Mixon is kind of the opposite.
I don't feel that way with Joe Mixon at all.
No, he's going to just push his way through whatever. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, his yards per attempt is laughable compared to James Cook.
Yeah. For this weekend, we do have some news on the Patriots side of things. There'll at least be some excitement. Drake May is going to start. There were some rumblings that maybe he wouldn't. It'd be Jacoby Brissett. Are they going to try to keep him healthy? We talked to Sal earlier this week, too, about like the pride aspect of this. And you can't just go out there and try to lose. These guys won't allow it. They won't let that happen. I like Drake May. I like watching him a lot. He had some beautiful throws 2 weeks ago against the Bills. So I'm kind of excited to watch him play again, because I think if they can get it right, whether it be the coaching or the overall talent, you know, whatever it is, I think they've got their quarterback. I think they've got their guy. So I'm happy to watch him now when the team is bad and I don't have to worry about him, knowing in a few years, every time I see a highlight, it's going to strain my heart. Because I think that's coming in like 2 or 3 years. If they can get the head – Jerod Mayo is still up in the air. We don't know if it's going to be a one-and-done kind of deal. The talent level's still low. If they figure it out, though, all of a sudden every highlight I see is just going to break me. Mm-hmm. Which is tough, because I was a huge May guy when he was coming out of North Carolina.
I've actually heard a lot of discussion today from some callers with Jeremy and Joe this morning of, like, should the Bills lose so the Patriots don't get the first overall pick, and it kind of not sets their rebuild back, but it, like, kind of slows it down maybe a little bit. And I don't know if it really makes that much of a difference. What'd they go from 1 to like 4?
Cool. They can't trade that pick.
Yeah, but they need to draft a quarterback.
No, but like they need more talent.
If they trade the pick, they'd get more.
That's exactly the point.
That makes sense.
They need more talent around the quarterback. If they move back to 4, who's trading with you? You just have the 4th overall pick is wonderful. It's great. It'll be a great, but it should be a great player for them. But if they've got the number 1 overall pick, they're moving back to 4. They maybe pick up another 2, a first next year. That could change things. I'd be for it. If it's a late game, I hope McDermott has all of the bad decisions.
Yeah.
Quote unquote bad decisions. And I'll take it. I will run with headcanon so hard. I really will. If that happens, I will run with headcanon so hard of like, no. 40 chess, baby. He hated the Patriots when Belichick was there. He still hates them now.
Who doesn't?
The Jets and the Dolphins have kind of taken over like the main hatred because the Patriots have been bad. No. This is a guy that actively wanted to embarrass the Patriots when Belichick was there and the Bills were getting good. Don't forget that.
I mean, it would be a like galaxy brain move.
Let's go.
To do that, which would be...
I don't even think it would. It'd be like, it's close. We're going to go for 4th and 8. Interesting. Let's see if Mitch can do it. If he does, good for him. If not, it's a shame. We just lost a meaningless game. Oh, you guys moved to the 4th overall pick? That's awesome. Good for you. That's awesome. Yeah, it's good. Hey, way to pick up that win. It means so much.
Mayo's on the sideline trying to just like hold in like a celebration. Or he's like faking a celebration like, yeah, we won.
That's what I want. That's what I want. It's so bad. Let's go back to the phones here. We've got John on the line. John, how are we doing today?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I got a kind of an obscure trivia question for you. You should probably ask Salas off the air when he comes in.
Mm-hmm.
What do Robert Saleh and Marv Levy have in common?
I do not know.
Both of them won 2 games on teams that ended up winning 4. Marv came in after they fired Hank Bulla. He went 2-5 at the end of that season. And, of course, we all know Saleh was 2-3 when he got fired. So they, Kelly threw 3 touchdown passes in the season opener that year. And here's an interesting fact. They were 2. Pete Metzler, Thurman, and Andre Reed, who all played in the Super Bowl years. So, and the next week on Sports Illustrated, back then was, you know, big magazine. The headline on, you know, Kelly was on the cover and it said, "A Namath with knees." You know, they were comparing him to Namath. You know, Namath had terrible knees. So, you really got to know your Bills trivia to get that. But I think Sal might be able to figure it out if you give him 5 minutes, right?
Yeah, thanks for the call, John. He came in and they go 2-5. Sala was 2-3 and then was fired. I mean, there's somewhat a connection. Yeah, I mean, somewhat. Not really. I think Salah's going to get another coaching job.
I'm excited to see where he goes because
it's not going to be immediate.
But he did go right to the Packers as like a defensive consultant, which I thought was like the funniest thing because, you know, Aaron Rodgers and all that. But I'm interested to see where he goes because he is a defensive guy, and we've seen kind of the shift here. It seems like teams are looking more towards offensive head coaches. But, I mean, the Commanders hired Dan Quinn. You know, like, it's not a given that it's all going to be offensive head coaches from here on out. But
no, because I think Flores is going to be
Brian Flores is another one.
Shout this year.
He's Robert Saleh in a year, right? Like, Flores is going to get opportunities this offseason. Saleh's going to get
hired as a defensive coordinator and then hope to go again.
I mean, hey, if Brian Flores leaves Minnesota, who's to say Saleh doesn't just go right to Minnesota?
No, I think this is a really good idea. I wonder, too.
Especially because he can learn. I mean, I guess learn under Kevin O'Connell. Haven't they crossed paths before, him and O'Connell?
Saleh?
Yeah. Wouldn't it? Because O'Connell was O'Connell in San Francisco as part of the Shanahan tree or no? I might think of somebody else.
Look this up. On Saleh, though, or not on Saleh, but on Flores, I wonder how much his comments, like the stuff that came out about Tua, actually doesn't hurt him as much as maybe people thought.
Yeah.
Where it becomes like this was just being coached maybe too abrasively and maybe too rudely, was just voicing his opinions of this guy is simply not good enough. And ultimately has kind of been proven correct. And him more just, he had frustration. And we know that he had frustrations with the team wanting to tank, wanting to go for Tom Brady, wanting to do all this. He wanted the best guy for the job, where it seemed like the Dolphins wanted the best, you know, PR guy or what have you. Because remember, Herbert in that draft class was not perceived as highly as Tua. Earlier in the college year had the whole tank for Tua feeling. And so Miami getting him was maybe, I think, more of a PR. Tua's not bad by any means. But if you had Justin Herbert with those teams, we're having very, very – and Herbert, I'm not even going to say, is on the Allen Mahomes tree yet. I mean, he's not on their tier.
Right.
But you do wonder if he goes to a team –
like Miami,
like
and then
Miami.
Everything else stays the same. It's Kevin O'Connell, Rams.
Okay, so he's not
49ers.
He's McVay.
Sorry, I thought for some reason. I mean, same kind of.
It's the same sort of offense,
concept,
yeah.
but anyway, my point there was is like I just feel like Robert Saleh could kind of learn from a guy like that. I mean, look at what O'Connell has done as a head coach so far.
Love him.
I mean, he's been there since 2022, and the Vikings have been super solid. I mean, look at what he's doing with Sam Darnold. I know that's a player, but you got to think that he can also do that with a coach, too. I mean, I wonder what he's done with Brian Flores, right? Like, sometimes it takes that kind of, you know, learning period for a guy like Saleh to, you know, learn stuff that he wasn't necessarily able to when he was with the terrible organization like the Jets. I mean, Saleh comes from the 49ers, which that's a great place to learn from and jump into the next level.
They're really outside of them having injuries, they win.
Yeah,
they
right.
win a lot.
Exactly. So I mean, I don't know where he goes at this point because, like you said, it's probably going to be a next year thing. He's going to be a coordinator this year, this coming year, I should say. But he's one of those guys where if he lands in another AFC opponent, I'm a little nervous because the Bills have always had issues with his defense, and I don't really want to have to worry about that.
No, like, but you also, just with him too, how much of the toxic sludge of the Jets is going to kind of be worn off where it's like Saleh just had no choice.
Yeah,
that,
right.
That he
right.
was sort of a straw man out there.
Well, and that's what makes me more nervous is because, like I said, he has the idea with the defensive structures and things. If he gets in the right team with the right people, he's going to be really good.
I don't know if really good. I think he has a very good defensive mind. I'd like to see him on another team because I think he does deserve another chance. How bad the Jets front office and ownership really has been. But it seemed like he was getting a lot out of the team last year. And then this year, it's sort of they made the really quick jump fire. And, I mean, they've been terrible since. So we'll see. He should be an interesting name to see where he goes as a defensive coordinator, because I think absolutely. And then if Flores actually is able to leave Minnesota and become a head coach somewhere else, because like you've mentioned, defensive coordinators have had difficulties getting head coaching jobs. Not always. I mean, McDonald over in Seattle, Atlanta's guy whose name I'm blanking on, Raheem Morris, he's over there. You know, these are defensive guys. They've been able to get head coaching jobs. So we'll see. 803-0550, the number two call. We'll get more of a word on the Bills. It's coming up next. Sal Capaccio joins the show. You're listening to WGR.
There's some teams that are harder to sneak the ball on if they've got some bigger guys and they have a good plan for that. Sometimes it is just man-on-man and low man wins, and again, just trying to find the right crease and trying to get 1 yard. And sometimes, you know, we've been pretty successful at it this year. Probably a couple times where I didn't do a good enough job, but it's definitely a powerful tool for us that maybe not a lot of teams can use it because of the size that we have up front. I'm at the quarterback and the guy usually behind me pushing, so...
There is Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen talking a little bit about the QB sneak action that the Bills have. Them and the Eagles kind of now become famous for. They're on the 1 yard line, baby.
The tush push and the snowplow. Let's go.
You know what's happening, and they score a lot of the time, if not like 95% of the time. For more on the Bills, as funny enough, the last 2 days have been very big news day for the Bills. We go to the Western Hotline as Sal Capaccio joins the show. Sal, how are we doing on this morning?
Pretty good, guys. Good to be with you.
Going to be with you as well. Only two Pro Bowlers for the Bills, Sal. I'm somebody, I only really get upset for the players because I know it can play into their contract. This does seem to be the Bills' MO, though, like in this era. I think out of like one of these years, they got like eight, but for the most part, it's like around five or so guys that get these first nods.
Yeah, you know, I think every fan base, you know, looks at their team and props up their own guys and says, oh my God, I can't believe this guy didn't make it or that guy didn't make it. There's really good players around the league, right? But I think to your point, which is exactly right, Zach, which is the Bills have kind of, you know, been a team-first team, right? I mean, that's do your 111th. It's not about the stars. They have some stars, and they have had some over the years. But I think even defensively, specifically, yeah, I know Taron Johnson is a Pro Bowler, and Micah Hyde made it once, and Jordan Poyer made it once. But you really every year it was more about the collective sum of the parts more than anything. And I think this year really underscores that, especially on the offensive side, but on both sides of the ball. I mean, you can't have the everybody eats mantra and then expect somebody to have these unbelievable numbers that get them there, right? But at the same time, James Cook, close to 1,000 yards. I think he has a case, no doubt about it. And there's definitely, you know, other guys that you could say, okay, well, maybe he should have been there, and he wasn't chosen. I think the biggest snub is Christian Benford for the Bills. He wasn't even an alternate, which is ridiculous to me. Christian Benford, I think what happens with DBs is, I think you guys would agree that you get your name recognition through stats, right? You get your name recognition through interceptions around the league and things like that. He's got two, but he's just so good. Teams don't really throw at him much, and when they do, and he has really great, you know, numbers as far as, you know, holding receivers down or, you know, catches against them, percentages and things like that. So I think that's the one guy I look at and say, you know, I really – think he should have been on that list somewhere. But, you know, it's a Pro Bowl, and, you know, it's obviously their bigger goals for this team.
Yeah, so the one thing we were really looking at was James Cook, comparing him to some of the other running backs in there. And obviously, like, Derrick Henry, you're not going to overtake Derrick Henry, and even Jonathan Taylor, too. But Joe Mixon's a guy that has the same stats as James Cook, if not worse, in most categories. And it's just kind of surprising that he's in there and Cook's not. And it obviously, Cook is the first alternate, so, you know, he's right there. But it's just still, like, kind of frustrating for how good of a season he had.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I would say Mixon really started off great, and then he had the injury, and he missed some games. But those first few games kind of probably put him there, right? Like, you remember the first month of the season, like, holy cow, Joe Mixon, he's awesome. And that probably really put his name out in the forefront for this conversation. And people just, you know, you just kind of think about, oh, yeah, Joe Mixon. He had his name out there. He was doing all these great things. James Cook's kind of got better as the season's gone on. He's been consistent, but I think he's been doing some of his best work later in the season here, and that's probably hurt him a little bit in the – eyes of, you know, some of the voters and fans or whatever, you know, however that goes down. So you're right. I think statistically, you know, one for one, you know, you're right that James Cook probably deserved it over him. You know, Mixon has had a good year, but like I said, I think you go back, it really was mostly in the beginning part of the year when he was doing most of his work.
Looking to this weekend, Sal, the Bills did have – they had practice yesterday, right? I mean, it was a walkthrough, but they did hold practice.
They had a walkthrough, yeah.
All right, cool. Terrell Bernard, we know, is not playing. It's a quad injury. It sounded more – it's a mix between day-to-day, week-to-week, more leaning towards day-to-day?
Yeah, so that's what Sean McDermott said. The words he used were somewhere between day-to-day and week-to-week, more like day-to-day. So let me just give you my interpretation of that. I've covered the Bills, and Sean McDermott covered him specifically in press conferences for 8 years now. And when he talks and says these kinds of things, there's kind of ways that you can read into it. So the best way I can read into it, from knowing what he generally means by these things, and this is just my interpretation, that week-to-week means you're going to evaluate it next week. He just told you he's not playing this week. So what does that mean? You go to next week. That's week-to-week. So it's a week-to-week evaluation of the injury, but the severity of it would be more on the day-to-day side, if that makes sense, right? Which is, okay, it's probably a day-to-day, you know, see how he is, but we're not going to really evaluate him until next week. He's not playing this week. That makes it week-to-week. So now you're somewhere between day-to-day and week-to-week. I hope that makes sense. I think the bottom line is, guys, I think the bottom line is, I think Bills fans shouldn't really be worried until we're here next week and Terrell Bernard's not practicing, but I don't think that would be the case at this point based on the way McDermott sounded. I don't think there's any cause for concern that he wouldn't be available for the first-round playoff game.
And then on the Patriots side of things, we got news this morning. Drake May is going to play, which it seemed in the early parts of the week that maybe it was leaning towards not, but as the week has gone on, it looked more and more likely that May was going to play.
Yeah, you know, what is the injury? Is he it was concussion or what was the injury? He was dealing with something. I think he's dealing with something, which is part of the reason why. It wasn't just because they were going to rest him and sit him. You know, he should play. I think if he's available, he should play. And, you know, I get it. Like, there's a lot of these things floating around. You guys had someone talk about it earlier. You guys have talked about it, which is, you know, should the Bills want to lose the game? But it's just that you're not going to do that. Like, no, the Bills shouldn't want to lose the game. Like, listen, I'm going to say this again to everybody, all right? Can you imagine if – what is Sean McDermott supposed to do? Is he supposed to go up to his players who are playing who have worked all year? Joe Andreessen gets a chance to start in this game, right? Let's use that as an example. So you're going to go to Joe Andreessen and say, hey, we really want to lose this game. Don't make the tackle. You can't do that. Like, come on. What are we talking about here, right? Like, it would be so disrespectful to do something like that to the players who worked their tails off to have a chance to win a game. That's true, because he's going out there to put good stuff on film. You know, the guy has a career to think about. He's going to try and, you know, be a backup quarterback or a starter or something next year, right? So all this nonsense about the Bills should make decisions to try and lose the game, it's just, to me, it's just dumb, to be quite honest with you. That's not what you do. It's professional sports. These people work their tails off all year, every week, to get out there and to try and play a game. And the coaching staff and everybody else owes it to them to try and do their best to win the game. You don't worry about the Patriots getting the number one pick. I don't worry about it. They have their quarterback. Sure. Could they be better and more enhanced by having a number one pick? Yes. It doesn't matter. You still have to make those picks. You still have to develop them. A few years ago, guys, the Miami Dolphins got a whole bunch of picks when they traded with the Niners for the Trey Lance pick. Well, where are they now? Well, what did it matter? What did it matter for the Jets have all those picks? The Browns have all those picks. Yeah, you don't worry about stuff like that. You go out and you play the game, you try to win.
I'm actually having a tough time thinking of any team that has like been able to get like that, you know, crap load of picks for someone to go move up. Like, I think of Washington with the Ricky Williams trade, where they got, you know, all of New Orleans draft, and it led to like no success at all. Like, it seems to be like teams that like lean in so heavy on those one drafts, it doesn't necessarily come out well for them. For May's other injury, it's a hand injury he's been dealing with.
Thank you. I know you had a concussion a few weeks ago. And on the other side, the Patriots, it's the same thing. Now, look, I think they're in a different situation than the Bills here, which have, you know, you're playing the team that has the chance. You're playing your guy. You're going to the playoffs. The Patriots, yeah, of course there's going to be people inside the Patriots organization who'd rather not win this game, right? I mean, that would help everybody to get the number one pick. There's no doubt about that. But it's the same thing for them. Like, if you think about the guys who are playing in the game and Gerard Mayo, like, you can't just I guess the way to say it is, are you going to purposely set them up for failure during the game? I mean, I don't know. I have a hard time believing Gerard Mayo is going to do something like that, nor should he. Brian Flores, you know, apparently was asked to do that a few years ago, you know, by management with the Miami Dolphins. And he said, screw you. Like, I'm the coach. I'm trying to win games. Like, I owe it to the people in the locker room here. And I respect that. Like, that's what you're supposed to do.
Sal, shifting back to the Bills here real quick. So talking on injuries and stuff like that, how could that potentially affect, like, who starts, who sits, who might get called up from the practice squad? Like, you know, Terrell Bernard specifically, he's not going to play. Like, does that really impact, aside from Joe Andreessen, like, does it impact anything else, like, you know, call-up-wise? Or how does that How's that going to look for the Bills?
Well, linebacker it won't because they don't have any call-ups. They have no practice squad linebackers, guys. They have one guy on injured reserve, Bale Inspector. Everybody else is on the active roster. You're going to see probably a lot of Joe Andreessen, Eddie Ulofosio, and Nicholas Morrow, I would guess, in this game. I bet you those guys all play in some capacity. I wonder what they do with Milano and or Dorian Williams. But at linebacker it doesn't, but it does matter around the roster, Josh, because you only get two elevations. And I even asked Sean McDermott yesterday, are we expecting Mike White to play? Like, is that something that they're going to do? And he said it's going to be tough to get Mike White even on the active roster to call up because look around. Like, you only get two elevations. This is not a preseason, 90-man roster, right? I mean, you can't just suddenly put in all these different backups and practice squad guys. You can't do that. The rules don't allow you to do that. You would have to literally cut players from your active roster and put them on waivers just to get more than two guys up from the practice squad. You're obviously not doing that. And think about it this way. Josh Allen's going to start, right? We know that. Well, do you want backup offensive linemen in there when Josh Allen's in there? No. You want starters, I would think, in there. So you're going to get probably your starting offensive line for whatever amount of snaps. And then from there, you only have four reserves. If you call Will Clapp up, you have five. I mean, so now that to me, you probably want to do that so you can at least put five new guys in on the offensive line. But guys, from there, that only leaves one more elevation throughout the whole roster.
Sal, how much of the college football did you watch yesterday? Because I know me as a Texas fan, I was in a glass case of emotions. Let's just say
I did not watch any of the first game, the Texas game, until about the third quarter. I mean, I saw the score was kind of a blowout. We were over at my parents' house, and my mom was making dinner, and I turned on. I'm like, whoa, okay, let me check this game out now. And that's when everything was kind of happening for Arizona State coming back. And, wow, what a fantastic game. Felt so bad for the kicker, but then, it obviously worked out in the end. Fourth and 13, was it, that they gave up for the touchdown? Oh, my God. I mean, how do you let that happen? If you are an Arizona State fan, it's just something that's going to live with you for so long. It's like 13 seconds with a Bills fan, right? It's like you had them. You're right there. Like you could have been in the semifinal. You make one stop on fourth and 13, and you win the game. And they couldn't do it. And then last night I guess I was pretty surprised. I didn't think that – I thought Ohio State could win. But, man, the way they just demolished Oregon was just ridiculous.
And also, like, the wide receiver factory. I still I will put this on paper. I still think LSU is the wide receiver factory for the NFL. Ohio State, you lose Marvin Harrison Jr. You may have upgraded with a true freshman in Jeremiah Smith. It's absurd.
He is amazing, right? I mean, Dan Orlovsky said he thinks a team could tank for him in a couple of years. I don't know. That's a wide receiver. You know what I mean? Like, you're really tanking for a wide receiver?
Right,
I mean,
right.
I know that he's fantastic, but a little hyperbole there, I think, but he is fantastic, no doubt about it. It just seems like Oregon every year this happens to them, right, doesn't it? My brother got his PhD at the University of Oregon, so we follow the Ducks pretty good. He's always, he's a big Ducks fan. He went there, and so we follow them pretty closely. And I just feel so bad because, for that fan base, because it seems like every year they have this great team, they get in this position, and then they can't close the deal.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm a Texas fan, but I always liked Oregon, kind of that Pac-12 after dark, and it felt like Oregon would be like 10-0, and then they'd play Stanford at night, and they'd lose. Like, it always felt like that's what it was. It was Stanford with, like, Kevin Hogan, and you're like, really? That's who you lost to? All right.
I know. So what do we got? Texas and Ohio State.
That's going to be the Cotton Bowl in Dallas. So Texas will have the home crowd. Yeah. And then today at 4, we do have Notre Dame and Georgia. Sadly, that game had to been postponed to today due to the terror attack in New Orleans. And then they'll play the winner of that game will play Penn State next Thursday. Texas and Ohio State's going to be next Friday night.
Notre Dame's not beating Georgia, are they?
I think they are. Me and Sneaky Joe, we both got a bet that Notre Dame's going to win the national title. Georgia's got their backup quarterback, and since losing to Northern Illinois, Notre Dame's put teams away.
Yeah, then UB beat Northern Illinois the next week. By the way,
their second ever ranked win in program history. Pete Lembo. I mean,
What are you thinking about what is the what's the word on Ohio State Texas? I think you got to lean Ohio State at this point the way they're playing.
I think Ohio State's going to kill them. Yeah. I'm not. I'm like next front.
We really think they can keep this consistency going, though? I mean, come on. Like, it's a Ryan Day-led team.
Sal, I'm sitting there with my girlfriend last night, and I'm like, we're busy next Friday night. She goes, cool. What are we doing? I'm like, we're watching Texas. And she goes, oh, are you excited? I'm like, nope. But we got to be loyal to the brand. We're going to sit through this whole thing. You're going to sit there with me, and we're going to watch them lose. She goes, you don't have to do that. I'm like, no. We got to be loyal to the brand. We got to be there to the end. I think right now Ohio State's a 6.5-point favorite. I could see that rising a little bit.
Yeah. Well, we got the Bills have practice at noon today, guys. Mm-hmm. So I'm down here at One Bills Drive. We'll keep you updated on the latest injury report and what's happening from down here. And then players will talk a little bit after practice today.
And then Sean McDermott joining you tomorrow morning during the
Extra Point? On the Extra Point Show, yep, on this show, right around 11 o'clock, I would guess. We'll confirm that up today, but we'll get an official injury report as we roll into the weekend and the game Sunday at New England.
Sounds good, Sal. Talk to you soon. Thanks for joining with us.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline. Going to take a quick time out here before we wrap up today's show. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and it is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here for one final segment as we get you ready for Sabres Live coming up at 12 o'clock. One fun note that I wanted to bring up here with college football. So the seating has not been great. This is year one of the 12-team playoff.
They're working it out.
Yeah, and I've seen like every college football.
Don't abandon it, please.
No, they're not going to abandon it. They're going to have to fix the seating. The seating is not correct. Like, it is bad. There's no reason Arizona State was the 4, Boise State the 3, especially when they showed like the rankings. They're like, oh yeah, by the way, but like Boise State's actually our 12th ranked team, but they're going to be our 3rd ranked team.
You should just do 1 through 12.
I agree with the Big 4 champions, the ACC champion, SEC, Big 10, and Big 12. You just definitively get in. You don't necessarily get the bye. You just are definitively in.
Well, I was saying you take the AP rankings, mm-hmm, 1 through 12, and that's your seeding.
I still want the power conference championships to have power. I don't want teams to literally go, I'm not playing this. Like, I'm literally denying or declining an invitation because if I lose this, I'm out. Like, I want it to be where if you win it, you're automatically in. It's just where the seeding will fall.
Right.
Because the stat I want to bring up is the fact that the first round bye teams, those being Boise State, Arizona State, and Oregon, are 0-3. If Georgia loses tonight, they have a backup quarterback against a very good Notre Dame team. The first round byes will be 0-4 in the inaugural 12-team playoff. That's not good, which also tells you how bad the seeding has been. It should be like the NFL, where you reseed.
Yeah.
It reseed after round one. The lowest seed will go to Oregon, because the idea that we're getting Oregon, Ohio State in round two is absurd. All because Ohio State lost one more game and didn't get to go to the Big Ten championship game.
Right. Yeah.
But I think we have the best teams left. Georgia, it's a shame they lost Carson Beck for the season. It may actually be better off for them. I don't think they've been all that good up to this point with Beck. They've been too up and down. They now got a mobile quarterback. We'll see. And then Notre Dame, I think they've been incredible. Texas likes to play with their food, but they've been very good. Ohio State, we're all seeing it. They're lighting teams up. And Penn State may have the best quarterback in the 2025 draft class who happens to not be leaving college in 2025. So, I mean, I think they're very, very good teams. I like where we're at right now in terms of the teams that are left, and I've liked the stories. Boise State got in, and they should have, and if it weren't for some turnovers, that'd have been a closer game. Arizona State and Texas had the best game of the tournament. Arizona State's building something. It just sucks that teams like Tennessee were blown out, Indiana blown out, SMU blown out. Because even Clemson and Texas also was a good game. Yeah. I hate to say it, but it was a good game.
Spread on Texas-Ohio State right now, 6. Exactly 6.
It's going to totally rise. That's going to do it for me and Josh. Sabres Live coming up next as the Sabres are out in Colorado to take on the Colorado Avalanche. That game coming up at 9 o'clock. This is WGR.